Oh yeah, I can show it to you. Then I went to graduate school in at Columbia University. There I again was very fortunate that my professor was Isidro Rabi, R-A-B-I, who eventually got a Nobel Prize. He also became Truman's science advisor. Of course, he had a lot to do with nuclear weapons, which was not talked about at that time. Fermi, who, by the way, was a lousy professor. He was one of my professors. I failed thermodynamics twice. Failing his course, I finally figured the hell with it. I just didn't go to the third one. Just read the books and passed it. I was teaching this message. Now, I was fortunate when I was asked by Isidro Rabi to build his microwave sources, which were low, actually 12, 13 on megahertz, they fired from 6 on megahertz on up. And he used them for investigating the magnetic moment of molecules, which eventually led to a Nobel Prize. And this is the technical foundation of magnetic resonance imaging. Some people call it nuclear magnetic resonance imaging, but the word nuclear is de-emphasized since it does not convey much confidence to the average layman who probably thinks more of nuclear destruction than of peaceful nuclear energy uses. So, and I remember I was using some Western Electric triodes. We worked about 2 stories below the ground, so we had no changes in temperature. We knew about the kind of temperature control which I later encountered in the Bell system. We don't have it in the university. On the other hand, I could see with frequency modulation in my oscillators, someplace in the middle of the night, probably about 1/2 mile away, just the very light vibration penetrating into my lab. So it was fun. And as I was taking those graduate courses, I didn't realize it at the time, but one of the AT&T people in there was a fairly high-level department chief, second Corbett. And one day when I went out to the Bell system to look for a job, he interviewed me. He hired me on the spot because he knew me from some advanced calculus, sequential equation, operational calculus courses, and things like that. So he thought I was a client. He didn't know how much of a client I was because he didn't realize that in Germany, before you can qualify to study for physics, you have to have a 1/2 year's fine mechanical apprenticeship, and mine was at Zeiss. So you really learn to work with your hands to give you a little feeling for it. The first day I came in there, in order to take me down a few pegs, they put me in with another crew who were cleaning out boilers. Now, those boilers are probably about 3 stories high and maybe as wide as this room. And what we were doing in there, we were with hammers and chisels just trying to get rid of the deposits. And you can realize that 5, 6, 7 people are busy, and then, I mean, the noise level is very interesting. So they let me do it for about 2 days, and of course I came home with all this white stuff in my hair and clothing always full and things like that. But then 2 days later they kind of reestablished my self-confidence by letting me handle something very interesting, which I'd never done before. There was a time during the day when the Siemens factory used up more electricity than the city could furnish. So you had your own big generators in there. And of course, you had to synchronize them very, very carefully before you connected them, because if you connect them to one part of the base, you lift the thing off the foundations. They didn't tell me much. They said, here it is, here's the synchronizing equipment, and here are the synchronizing lamps. I had a lot of fun, you know, pulling these things at changing the speed and then pulling it in at the right time. They wouldn't let it do just the plain work of removes stone deposits in oil. But then it took me down again a couple of levels. The time spent by a good supervisor on me probably was 25% of his time. And the first thing I had to do, he gave me a piece of steel, which was roughly about 2 inches cubed, not quite, or maybe more. He said, "Now, you file this thing to be a perfect cube. And by the way, here's some gluing paper, here's a flat plate, and here's the file." I wasn't used to it, and I had bloody hands. So I had to put tanning liquid into my hands to toughen them up because it just didn't work. It took me about a week, and of course the first two surfaces, getting a right angle, getting flat, that wasn't too bad. The third one was okay. And after that I learned that there were some big surface grinders on the outside, and I made friends with one of the operators, and I said, "No, grind it and be nice and flat," and then I mess it up a little bit with file so it looks good. I finally skinned this cat. But in the process, I had to go through all the hand tools and all the machine tools. And one of the interesting experiences, for about 1 week, I was working in the smithy, hardening things and getting things white hot and surface hardening and hammering them white hot, things like that. Just a lot of fun. I learned a lot. I finally ended up in inspection, so I knew the various inspection tools. And it was about 6 months. And this was a requirement. There were only 4 approved facilities for the technical university in Stuttgart, which they had approved for this kind of apprenticeship. That was one of the prerequisites. We don't have it in this country. And today in Germany, you have 2 parts of this apprenticeship. You have the one before you are allowed to join. You have to pass that, and then just about before you graduate, and by the way, their graduation, their engineering degrees is about 2 years in the graduate work here. It's 2 years after the bachelor. The undergraduate degree, 4 diplomas, about equivalent to a bachelor. So they're getting more of that kind of experience. And 2 years ago, I was over in India. The UNIDO, the United Nations Industrial Development Organization, somehow got a hold of me and said they would pay all expenses, and it was enough to pay for my wife and myself. And I was lecturing over there and talking to some of the young engineers because they expect India to get into world trade and be competitive. And I thought my subject was how to design for manufacturability or competitiveness, global competitiveness. And so I got to talk to some of these people. "Oh, you're designing an antenna. How do you do that? Are you sketching it up first and then you go to the shop to build it and then you try?" "Oh, no. I have to get a mechanical engineer and he will lay out the points." And I say, "Who's going to make it?" "Now, he will then go to the shop and try it out. And who's going to test it? Somebody else going to measure it." They didn't want to get their hands dirty. Very good in theory, but getting hands dirty, it's another story. So they have several problems of entering efficiently global competitiveness. I was lecturing for 2 weeks solidly, probably about 6 hours a day, 5 hours a day, maybe 2 hours of questions and answers. So it was very, very interesting experience. But there are great differences in the different countries. The developing countries are different. But some of the more recent developing countries, like maybe Thailand, Indonesia, and of course, as I said, South China, they have learned that you have to immerse their people deeply into those matters. And they, in turn, are making a necessary part of a permit. Like if you want to Thriller Factory in China, or you want to have a joint venture there, a policy agreement is that you must disclose new technology to the locals. You must spend a certain amount of support effort to teach in any universities, and you have to train local managers. And then, of course, the insidious thing is they want you to obligate yourself that you will contribute maybe 60 or 70% of your output to export. And the plan there, the brand strategy, is not only to invade us here, but we're talking about high-tech stuff, and not talking about the low stuff you buy at Christmas made in China or some textiles. We're talking about cellular telephones and VCRs and advanced communication equipment. There's a complete change which people are not aware of. I am quite worried about how we are going to cope with China. And in my opinion, it's only a question of time, maybe a 10-year time delay, that we will have a similar problem with Russia. Because the Russian education is quite a bit superior to ours. They changed the middle 60s to embrace math and physics and the hard sciences very, very well. The average Russian, even today, has a much better education than the average U.S. high school graduate. So I think down the road, maybe another 10 years, we will have interesting problems because of the educational background of some of these countries, of their capabilities. It's only a question of time until enough capital and technology is transferred to those countries, and